And Ethan will come for us all.
Hey Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Not pod, just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't
Thanks.
Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today, am I doing it? Okay, I'm doing it.
You today, usually do it.
we're going to have a joint unsolved missing case. Yours is missing, right? No. Unsolved.
Just
joint unsolved.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because we haven't had an unsolved in a hot dog minute. So, yeah. What are we drinking?
This is an unsolved. So pick your poison, but also it's Cinco de Mayo when we're recording this. So I have a margarita and I believe Kelsey also does. Montana?
I have coffee. I'm unmedicated, so coffee is like
you
my
need
medication.
all the help we can get, to be perfectly honest. I told my husband before we got started, I was like, if she's unmedicated, I can't promise you how long this is going to take, and he just laughed and walked away. So
it's been painful.
So cheers to that.
Painful. Cheers.
And I believe I go first this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because
oh, no,
Kelsey keeps
out.
Up with these things. So I will go ahead and get started. This is actually a case, I was mentioning it earlier, that has been on my list for almost since we first started this podcast. I found it. And I've been waiting, hoping more information came about. There really hasn't been a lot. So I just really wanted to cover it to get the word out and hopefully get some attention to it. But this is the unsolved murder of Chanti Schreiberdecker. Chanti Matria Schreiberdecker was born May 26th, 1979, to Howard Schreiberdecker, and I don't know who her mother was because I couldn't find any articles that stated who her mother was, but they do list over and over that she had a stepmother named Gloria Edine. I'm not sure if that's how I pronounce it. If I pronounced it wrong, I do apologize. Who still lives in Alex City as of 2023, but Chanti was born in Illinois. And so at some point, Howard moved to Alex City, Alabama from Illinois and brought Chanti with him.
I'm pretty sure it's Illinois.
I knew you were going to correct me. I'm not even going to go there. It's already starting. At the time of her disappearance, Chanti was described as a white female, approximately 5'7", 150 pounds, with white hair, pink eyes, and a reddish complexion. She may have been wearing blue contacts and was listed as an albino. She was attending school at Benjamin Russell High School. Chanti was last seen at the age of 15 at Radney Elementary School in Alexander City, or Alex City as a lot of people call it, around 6 p.m. at basketball practice on December 9th, 1994. There was a reported sighting around 8 p.m. by four people at a nearby Walmart, where it was reported she was there with some boys. This was not concrete, however, because they said they believed it was her. So of the reports, it was kind of like it was a sighting, but it wasn't 100% by the people that reported it.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You said on her description, she's described as white. Is she white or is she black albino? Is she a white albino or a black albino?
I believe white from what okay. I could, from the way that she looks.
Okay.
From her features. I couldn't see any pictures of her dad, and I don't know what her mom looked like, so I can't confirm that 100%. And it's not okay. clarified.
It says she's a white female.
Okay. I mean, it makes a difference. Just in, like, their features and things like that. I just wanted clarification.
Yeah, no, you're good. Both the school and the Walmart are just off of Highway 280 on the southern border of the city. There was another witness that came forward saying she came into a North Alex City convenience store not far from her home after 8 p.m. So all the way from the south part of the city to the north part of the city between around because and it would have been around 8 p.m. that somebody saw her near the school and then shortly after 8 p.m. on the north side. So she would pretty much have to have driven that distance if those sightings are both accurate.
Is it possible to get from one side to the other even driving in that time frame? It seems like a really short time.
Yeah, Alex City isn't huge. It's not a huge city, but you would have to be driving to make that. I think, yeah, I've got the distance later on. I'll go through.
Okay, because I was like, if you're trying to get...
Because I was wondering the same thing. I'm like, how long would it actually take? And I'll go, I actually went on maps and I went down a whole rabbit hole looking at how far the distances were between the sightings and... I'll get into it. According to her mother, Chanty was to call her brother Christopher, who was 16 at the time, once basketball practice was finished, so he could come pick her up and drive her home. But he never received a call from her. By 10 o'clock, Christopher began to worry and went out looking for her. But after an hour of searching and no sign of her, he called their parents, who told him to call the police. She was reported missing shortly after, and the search began. So this time, this was one of those situations where they did not lose any time. They immediately started looking for her.
Oh, okay. I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, okay, they did it immediately.
Yeah, so it was a smaller city. People knew her. She was planning on being home. She was going to be home. They didn't really argue it. After nearly 3 months of searching, an anonymous call came in to Coosa County Sheriff's Office on February 24, 1995, reporting a body had been found along Highway 9 near Nixburg County. Upon searching the area and discovering the remains, they were identified as the body of Chanty Shiverdecker, along with school books and a purse nearby that were identified as belonging to her. She was found uncovered in a ditch approximately 75 to 100 feet behind a trailer that served as an office for Bama Woods, which was abandoned by that time. And that was located off of Highway 9 and about 1 mile from the intersection with Alabama Highway 22. So, of course, I pulled up maps to see how far away this was from the school, and it's about 9 miles. Oh, this location is about 9 miles from the school, which is, again, not a far drive, but that's a pretty far walk to get to. From the northern part of Alex City, depending on how far north and which side, it could be up to 15 miles away from North Alex City, which is when her latest reported sighting was. So it would have been about 15 miles away from the last sighting where she was found. Does that make sense? And between
Yes.
the north side and the south side, depending on if it was like a straight road, like on 280, you're talking about between like 7 to 10 miles, I think, depending on how far south and how far north.
Wait, it wasn't, but it's not on 280. Because if it was on 280, it's going to take you way longer, right?
Well, the convenience store, I couldn't figure out what the convenience store was. They didn't specify which one it was. They just said North Alex City. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it could be up to 15 miles away if you're talking about like going catty corner on off of 280 on a side road somehow. But mm-hmm. you're talking about 7 to 10 miles if it's south to north or vice versa on the main road, and then up to 15 miles if you had to kind of go out of the way.
And also,
so, I mean, it would definitely be, you're talking like 10 to 20 minute drive probably.
Okay. And it's not like Alex City is not like Birmingham 280, I imagine.
No. No, I mean, you can, on 280, you could drive through Alex City if the traffic wasn't bad. You could drive through it in like 5-10 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a fairly large city because it is off of 280, which is a main highway for those of you that don't live in Alabama. That's a very, very much a main highway, and it can get very congested, very busy. At that time of night, probably not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so, like, at 8 p.m.
I lived on 280 for like 2 years. I had an apartment that was two lights away from the place I worked, and it would take me almost 30 minutes to get down two lights. And yeah, that's not even, it was like less than half a mile to get to work.
And that sounds about right. And it hasn't gotten any better.
No.
It's only getting worse. They still haven't figured out how to make that work better.
Well, maybe at someday. One point they had said that they wanted to put, it was when I lived over there, they were going to put in an elevated highway, which would have helped immensely. But
everybody keeps shooting down the option, which is unfortunate, because for those that it would be like an expressway, so for those that are just trying to get to Birmingham, it would get them off the road. But whatever, neither here nor there.
Yeah,
little side quest. Anyway, due to the decomposed nature of the remains and the unfortunate manner that they were found, that it had been out in the wild, so it wasn't fully intact. The forensics team was unable to determine an official cause of death, but they were able to rule her death a homicide. Joint investigative efforts from the Coosa County Sheriff's Office, Alexander City Police Department, and Alabama Bureau of Investigation began working together in an effort to solve the case, and still to this day consider this case an open investigation.
Oh, that's a new one too.
Yeah, I know. They didn't close it or try to say, oh, it was undetermined.
Well, and just there. The fact that they immediately, Alabama,
the ABI, yeah.
What is it? Yeah, AI, whatever it is, stepped in. Or they didn't step in.
And they all worked together. The three areas, the county, the city, and the state, all were working together to try to solve this case.
Yeah, that's surprising.
That's also surprising. Sheriff Terry Wilson feels strongly that someone is out there that can shed some light on this tragedy and help give the family closure. Unfortunately, Chanty's father passed away April 5th, 2022, at the age of 74, without finding out what happened to his daughter. According to the Coosa County News, that was the saddest part about Howard passing away, was that he didn't get the answers he needed to feel good. But I think he felt good about where everybody was in life and that it was his time, said his wife, Chanty's stepmom. He held on an extra 12 years. And from what I could see, he had actually passed away after a very long time of being sick. I think he was sick with cancer, if I remember right. So he held on for as long as he could.
Poor guy.
Her brother, Christopher, and her stepmother, Gloria, still searched for answers, making entreaties to the public to report anything they may know that could help the case, believing that with the technology available to us today, there could be a new development to the case that helps get it solved. They had started a Facebook page and regularly update it with any news. They also frequently report any other unsolved cases that are local to try to get the word out for those as well. So I will definitely be sharing a link to their Facebook page. Please follow it. Help out. I mean, if you know anything, definitely let people know. But also you can follow that page. And like I said, they share any other recent and sometimes not so recent cases just to make sure that they don't fall to the side and get forgotten. Christopher made this post that I can only imagine describes how many family members of unsolved cases feel. And he made this post on December 8th, 2015. Quote, for the past 20 years now, my family has had a difficult relationship with the holiday season. You see, on December 9th, 1994, my sister, Chanti Matria Shiverdecker, went missing from Radney Elementary School after a girls' basketball practice, and her ultimate fate would not be known to us for almost three more months. This made the Christmas of 1994 one where we had to hope, forsake despair, and suffer the ever-present feeling that we had no right to celebrate, give thanks, or share when someone so vital to us was unaccounted for. You can ask anyone that has ever been in a similar circumstance, and they will tell you time and time again that the worst thing is the not knowing, and this is true. That season, we moved into a house with a bedroom reserved for my sister. She had presents waiting for her under the tree in the hope that she would be home by Christmas morning. Community searches were organized by local churches, and every time they were finished and we were still left not knowing, we found ourselves with the small blessing of still being able to hope. The trick to tolerating not knowing is to hope. It is as simple as that. Then February came and the police gave us the news that Chanti wasn't coming home. Eventually, the tree was taken down and the presents were removed. Her room in the house, she never got to see, went on to be the home of several family members and exchange students as if to help fill the hole left by the member of our family that would be forever missing. It seemed that hope had died. Going into the 20th Christmas since that terrible year, I am reminded and wish to remind all of you that there is still one great unknown that hangs over my family, and that is that the case of Chanti Matria Shiverdecker is still unsolved. The question I hear the most from people is, did they ever catch the person who did it? And I think it is important that people know that the answer to that question is no. That means that even after all this time, we still have hope. We hope that there are people out there that may be able to help us solve this case, lead the investigation in the right direction, and to finally give us the peace of knowing. And that was from Chris Shiverdecker and their family.
That's really sad.
Makes me cry. I cried the first time I read it. I cried the second time and tearing up now. But it so clearly states what I know family members must feel. And for those that do have that unknown, they continue to hope, but you, with every passing year, it has to be harder and harder to continue to hold on to that hope,
but to do it.
And that's one reason why we do this
so much for so long. It's so oh man.
He made another post after their father had passed. Happy birthday, Chanti. Here are some words from Chris. Please read and share. Today would have been my sister Chanti Shiverdecker's 43rd birthday. I had been thinking about what I was going to say today for a long time. I was going to start by saying that if she was still with us, this would have been her first birthday without our father. It went on and was horribly sad. I decided on a different approach, one that is optimistic. Instead, I've decided to look at it like this was the first birthday in 27 years. Oh, sorry. That my father got to celebrate it with her, and to ask of you a favor as a birthday gift on this occasion. Every time I make a memorial for my sister, the response from all of you has been tremendous, and I'd like to put that interest into good use, so here goes. I'd like you to contact the Coosa County Sheriff's Office, the Tallapoosa County Sheriff's Office, and or the Alabama Governor's Office, and he does include the contact information, and respectfully voice your concern for a successful conclusion to her case or to offer any assistance you may be able to give in helping to do so. As most of you know, she went missing on December 9th, 1994 and was found murdered nearly 3 months later. It remains unsolved to this day. Bringing attention to the case via social media has been incredible, and I truly appreciate all the care and support all of you have given over the years. However, I believe it's time to let those who are able to do something about this case know you care as well. And he's right, because that keeps that case alive and keeps their attention on it. Oh, he's very eloquent, and
he's got a way with words. I'll give him that. Maybe I there do was need also, that margarita.
A comment from a follower.
Crier, so
yeah, I know. Same. I get red and blotchy. A comment from a follower in a response from Gloria around December 2021 said, This is my first time commenting about this case. Where Chanty's body was found is about 100 yards behind the trailer I grew up in. We stayed next to the wood yard. Now, just follow me with this. If you're standing in front of wood yard, my trailer is to the left. To the left of me is my uncle's house. Directly across the road from him is my other uncle. And directly across the road from my trailer is my grandparents. So they're all very close right there in that area. That area at night is very quiet and we all had dogs. So any movement would make dogs bark, etc. And of course, lights would come on and we would start looking to make sure everything was safe outside. But that night, it was quiet and no disturbance. December to February are our coldest months. So how did her body decompose that bad in such a short period of time? How would somebody know to take her where she was found if they weren't from this area? Also, the fact that her books were found in good water, which I don't really know what that means.
Like good condition and water.
Yeah, maybe.
So she's thinking it's like a dump and run?
I think so. That's what it seems like. Rodney's school didn't have cameras to see who she got in the car with because that was still a question. They didn't really know how she got to and from. She was seen with some boys, but nobody was like identified specifically.
I was going to ask that. Did they interview these boys?
They had a couple of suspects who they talked to, but they didn't have enough. I think they probably had an idea, but they didn't have enough to do anything at the time. But that's actually what Gloria says as a response from the page. She said, "I'm Chanty's mom. I have suspects. One has already committed suicide, but I think it was his brother that set her up. The wood yard was just a dumping ground. I feel she was killed at their family business. It was also probably only just after dark, so maybe the dogs were not on alert yet. Her decomposition was mostly animal damage. Thank you so much for this information."
I don't know that the time of... I don't know their dogs, obviously, but I do know a lot of other dogs, and I don't know that the time of day would have mattered, because as we know...
Well, unless they were maybe weren't outside all the time, and maybe they let them at night as more of a guard dog type situation. I think that might be possibly what she was thinking too, but I can see where she's coming from.
Me speculating, it doesn't seem like her body was there until right before it was found, simply because of the condition of the books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they didn't have 3 months in Alabama, especially.
Well, the fact that they could even tell what they found and that it belonged to her gives me speculation that they were in fairly good condition, and for 3 months in the wet, cold. And here's the thing. They are our coldest months. However, Alabama weather is bipolar, for lack of a better term. It can be 80 degrees on a Monday and by Friday be below freezing. So with those kind of elements, that would also lead to decomposition if something was left out for an extended period of time. 3 months is more than enough time for books to be completely unrecognizable and belongings in a purse to be completely not being able to actually see what's there. And she was only 15, so she wouldn't have had a driver's license. At best, she would have had a permit. So, I mean, maybe they could have found that, but even then, they were able to identify what they found. So it does seem like this wasn't all out there. Her body and her belongings were not out there for the entire time. I don't think that make sense.
I don't think so. It doesn't make any sense. And at first I was like, you know, if I stand, yesterday it stormed really bad here, but as it was pouring down rain, I can stand outside and not get wet because I have a huge tree canopy and it doesn't get wet. And I was like, oh, but wait, it's December. There's not going to be a tree canopy in Alabama, you know, so it's still going to get any type of moisture. It's going to decomp and destroy those books. And I mean, animals would have gotten hold of the books too.
You would think.
Pests.
Yeah. And the fact that her mom said her decomposition was mostly animal damage kind of makes me think too, if that was the case, then I don't think her body was out there for that entire time either. Just because that wouldn't make sense.
No, because she would have, well, I guess it depends. Like, is she only bones at this point, or is she like,
I don't think so.
Okay. There's significant like bite marks and things like that.
They could tell it was animals.
Yeah. 3 months in, if she had just been laying out there, it's probably just going to be closer to bones.
I mean, it depends on how cold it was during that time period. That could definitely preserve, but it just makes me think that that was probably not the case. They weren't, the remains weren't out there the whole time. It just doesn't seem like that would fit.
I mean, we're not, you know,
we're not forensic experts, but
I did look something up if you want me to share.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I just Googled how long does it take for a body to decompose in hot weather. Of course, I don't know. Was it? Did you say? I forget what time of year.
It was December to February. So it would have been varying temperatures, which can actually affect it more.
It's only different by like a couple days because I looked up both. So when I didn't specify weather, it said about 10 days. This says the time taken for a body to decompose depends on climactic conditions like temperature, moisture as well. In summer, a human body can in an exposed location can be reduced to bones alone in just 9 days.
So 3 months, regardless of the time, would have been enough to.
Yeah. And like I said, they didn't specify what the condition of the remains were. It could have been just bones. I wasn't looking for pictures or anything like that. But it was sufficient that they were able to tell that this was a murder, but not the cause of death. So I think part of the problem was there was probably missing remains that would have helped them to determine.
Right.
Due to the animal damage. And the reason why I say varying temperatures can affect it, if a body is frozen and then it thaws out, the decomposition does change. So if we had freezing cold days and then 80 degree days and vice versa going back and forth, that can actually affect it quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. But I still think that 3 months is a really long time, even in that type of condition.
Yeah, I would agree.
For it to be preserved. You know, she's not on the top of Mount Everest. She's in Alabama.
Yeah, in the elements too.
Yeah,
with animals.
One of the buggiest places.
Well, and the other thing is too, and I didn't think about this until just now, they said they had dogs. So were these dogs on leads? And if so, they wouldn't have gone. But if they're not, those dogs would have been in that area because they would have smelled it. Because I know my dogs go to anything that they have found that the cats have caught and thrown into their yard, they immediately go for it. So I feel like if she was there, the people who live around that area, if their dogs are loose at all, I feel like they would have noticed it before.
Well, in that area at that time, I highly doubt that there wasn't a couple of dogs that just weren't like loose. I mean,
I would expect.
Yeah.
So that's just a thought too. I could be completely off base, but. And then Gloria also posted another. She said, I edited the above. Read again. The older brother was familiar with this place and he did hard drugs there and had even been in jail for drugs at that point. No. So she has a suspect in mind. Not the one that completed suicide, but his brother, from what it sounds like.
Right.
A couple of comments on the post from those who knew Chanty, because I wanted to include just that there were people that loved her and remember her and knew her. Tony Ellis said, happy birthday, Chanty. Was very young when you left us, but I do remember one memory of you. When you fell into our thorn bush at our house, I remember because it was removed shortly after and left a bare space in our yard that could never be filled, just as you have to many lives. I want to have a neighbor where I fall into their thorn bush and they just remove it because it's a hazard.
Right.
Please. You really love me if that's what we do.
My neighbors would probably put in more.
Or put a fence around it so that maybe you wouldn't fall into it. Jenny Lane said, I like to picture her playing volleyball and eating unfrosted Pop-Tarts in heaven. So apparently she liked it unfrosted Pop-Tarts, which that has to be the only person I've ever heard of that likes those. But I know that they have them, so obviously people buy them and eat them.
They're disgusting. Sorry if you're an unfrosted Pop-Tart liker. And they actually have more calories than the frosted ones.
What?
Yeah.
They must add more sugar in the like the inside to make up for the lack of sugar on the outside. Julie Knoll, I think, said, I was thinking of her this week, too. She was loved by my family. She was such a sweet girl who knew what she wanted to do with her life. I pray that they find the people that took her from us, but God will see their punishment either way. And then Gus Hoff said, she used to babysit my kids. Such a sweet girl. They really need to solve this. And that is four comments out of probably hundreds. I don't know. I didn't count them all. But there are so many more that are crying for answers for the family and justice for Tanti. I just wanted to show a few that mentioned memories, specific memories with her and a little more about who she was. From all I can see, she was a sweet, beautiful girl who had her life ripped from her before it had even had a chance to begin. While the family and many others have their suspicions, we still haven't had any confirmation regarding who the perpetrator or perpetrators was or were. There is still a reward being offered by the current governor of Alabama, signed September 2017, of $5,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the perpetrator or perpetrators. An article on AL.com published December 2021 shows the $5,000 reward is still available up to 2021. As far as I can tell, it's still out there. If you have any information that may help in this case, please call Coosa County Sheriff's Office. We will include all of their information as well as their email. You can also contact Crime Stoppers. We'll include that information. And tips can also be submitted through the anonymous tip line as well. And all of that information will be in the case notes. And that is the case, unsolved murder case of Tanti Shiverdecker.
Well, good job. That was devastating.
I'm glad I went first.
Yeah, this is why we space these out so much. Oh man.
I mean, they're tough. It's tough. And I wanted to include Chris's posts because they were so eloquent and they do speak so well to what those families go through, because I don't feel like he's alone and his family is alone. I think that's very much how all of them have to kind of get through it. So I wanted to make sure and share that just because he did such a good job in relaying that information. And that's why we do these cases too, is to make sure that they don't get fall by the wayside. They don't get forgotten. And who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody will hear these cases and they'll know something.
I think my biggest thing about it, and especially, you know, hearing something like that from a family member, is I know who I am as a person and how I would feel in that situation. And I say that not ever having been in that situation, so maybe I don't fully know. But the idea that you have so much hope, that you can hold on to hope for so long and do the things that they did, like give her a bedroom and put presents under the tree and just hold on to that.
And keep the tree up. Because you want, when she comes home, she gets to celebrate Christmas and they'll have Christmas with her.
Yeah. And I can't imagine being in that situation and being that type of person. And so every time I hear something like that, I don't know. I'm just like, how do you do it, man? How do you do it? You know? And not, I mean, just to continue on with this, but to try and uplift other families that are going through it too. Like you try and make a difference in that situation for everybody, not just yourself.
And the way that he wants to acknowledge her every birthday, they make a post, and the one after his father died, and he acknowledged, like, mentally he was dealing with it, like, I started to make a post and then say how this would be the first one without her dad. And it went down a darker path than I wanted to go. So I decided to change tactics and say, this is the first birthday that dad gets to celebrate with my sister. And to do that and then write about it is just mind blowing.
Yeah.
And
mentally stable
really,
person.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously gone through it. And I'm sure he has a very supportive network around him that helps him get through it. But to share that is just, it definitely brings it close to home for anybody that has empathy for this type of a situation or for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, good job. The one that I'm about to cover also not great, but not like that. In a different way, you're going to be frustrated. Okay. So I guess, are you ready?
I guess. Regardless, we're going to have to get through it.
Yeah,
so
true.
Get started. I have my drink. I might need to beg for a refill so my husband may pop it.
Well, I'm going to tell you about the disappearance of Kyle Fleshman. And other people, I watched a lot of like YouTube videos on this of people covering it and like interviews, but people pronounce the name differently. So I'm going to say Fleshman. It's kind of spelled Fleshman. I don't know. F-L-E-I-S-C-H. M-A-N-N, Fleshman. I don't know. Do with that what you will. That's how it always is. And what's really frustrating about this one is that there's so much information. And like we've said in previous episodes, there's a lot of the same information, but then there's also a lot of like just slightly different information. And you're just not, you know, you're not 100% sure which one is correct or if it even has any, like, bearing on what happens. So, here we go. I'm just going to go into it. So, Kyle was born on September 24th, 1983, to Dick and Barbara Fleshman. Kyle was the first of his other two siblings, a brother and a sister. In 2000, the family moved to Charlotte, North Carolina for Dick's job at Fidelity Investments.
Well, how about that?
I know. I was like, oh, Samantha. Kyle attended North Carolina Catholic High School and later graduated from Elon College in 2006 with a degree in business administration. And Elon is about an hour and a half north of Charlotte. It's right in between Charlotte and Raleigh. Friends and family say that Kyle was a friendly, caring, and trusting person. He was quick to make friends. Right before his disappearance, his mother, Barbara, was actually diagnosed with breast cancer. And Kyle told her that he would support her and be by her side as she battled this disease. On November 8, 2007, Kyle and his mother, Barbara, and his sister, Noelle, met up at the house of Kyle's best friend, Daniel. All four of them took a cab to a Dane Cook comedy show to help brighten up Barbara's spirits after her cancer diagnosis. They knew they would be having a few drinks, so they did take a taxi there. And this is where like the different accounts come into play, and I don't think that this has any bearing in what is going to happen, but I want to give this other account as well. But apparently, in other reports, they say that Kyle and Daniel went to the show without Barbara and Noel, but Barbara and Noel were also at the show. They say that Kyle and Daniel were supposed to meet up with Barbara and Noel before the show for dinner, but that they couldn't make it. And then they ended up getting to the show separately and sat separately. And then when Kyle and Daniel left, Kyle texted Barbara and asked if they wanted to go have drinks afterward, but Barbara and Noel declined and went home. So they never actually saw each other that night because it was just, you know.
Just so happened to be that way. They just never crossed paths.
Because if you've been to a comedy show, in some cases, and especially like the show that we're going to go to in June, if we don't all show up together, you can be seated separately.
Well, especially if, I mean, they're not really having assigned seating. So it's kind of first come, first serve in those type of situations.
And like maybe that did happen. And I don't know. But in several other accounts, it says that they were together, you know, after the show. Regardless of any of that, all four of them went to a show. They saw Dane Cook, of all people. And then afterwards.
Yeah, that kind of threw me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. But it's fine.
But it was 2007. Dane Cook was really popular back then. So Kyle and Daniel end up leaving and going to a bar called the Buckhead Saloon. And it's actually only a block away from where they saw the show. And they decide to hang out there for a while. At the and by the way, the Buckhead Saloon is actually closed now, permanently closed. So it's not like a place that you can go to and check it out. I've never been. So whatever. They had a few drinks at the bar, but Daniel decided to close out his tab around 1 a.m. And again, this is another section where some places said 1, some places said 1:30. I don't think that it really matters when Daniel closed out his tab. He had work the next morning and decided he wanted to go ahead and get home, which 1 o'clock?
Well, you know, let's cut it an early night at 1 a.m.
Yeah,
that is a late night, my friend.
I mean, I remember back in the day, this early 20s, hanging out with Jason, and we'd be out until 2 or 3 in the morning and then roll up to the bank. And what?
Oh, I knew when that happened because you guys were both in the drive through, like barely functional.
But, you know, Daniel and Kyle are also in their early 20s at this point. So, it, you know, all of that tracks. Daniel asked Kyle if he wanted to leave with him, but Kyle decided to stay. In some places I found, it said that he had found a new group of friends that he was really vibing with, and so he wanted to hang out with them. In other sections, it said that he had only been talking to one girl that he was really vibing with. And so Daniel was like, oh, okay, like, my guy's found somebody. I'm going to, you know, peace out, bro. Good luck. I'm going to go home and get some sleep. Which, like, yeah. Sounds right. I mean, if they were women, it would be a different situation because we'd be like, uh-uh, girl, you can get his number, but we're not leaving you. But dudes, it's like, yeah, bro, get it.
You know? Exactly. And also, it could literally go either way because if it was a girl, he could have told some of his friends that, oh, no, I have this other group of friends or vice versa. So a way of like... I could see him saying either way and it actually being either way in that situation.
Yeah. So Daniel ends up leaving, but he does later say about Kyle's intoxication level when he left. He said, quote, Kyle wasn't extremely intoxicated by any means. I'm sure he was feeling pretty good. I know I was personally, but I don't think he'd reached the point where he wasn't aware of his surroundings. So he had a good buzz on. He wasn't like fall down drunk. Cool. Yeah. Sounds great. So Daniel leaves and he goes home. But when he wakes up the next morning, he sees that he's missed a call or calls from Kyle. Some places said 1 call. Some places said multiple calls. Whatever. He also saw that Kyle's car was still parked in his driveway, which began to worry Daniel. So he's not home, or he hasn't come and got his car. They didn't live together. Come and got his car and gone home. And he has multiple or one missed call in the middle of the night from his friend. And when he tries to call him, he goes straight to voicemail. But he doesn't immediately freak out, but he's still kind of worried. So Daniel begins to call around. This was 2007.
Okay, so this was like a cell phone he was trying to call that was going straight to voicemail? So, you know, he's been out all night. Those batteries weren't great. So his phone could have easily died at that point. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had a night of drinking and going out and doing things and you thought you plugged your phone up, however, you just put it on your nightstand or whatever and never even actually plugged it up. You maybe put the cord up to it and never plugged it in, whatever. and it died. I've actually had that happen a couple of times. So I would be worried as a friend, but also be convincing myself there was nothing wrong, because I think that's, as humans are, we try to do that in those situations.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like when Daniel left, Kyle was chatting up a girl. So to me, in my head, I'd be like, oh, maybe he went home with her. His phone died. They're still asleep, whatever. You know,
maybe he's getting brunch.
Yeah. But I think the one thing that really concerned Daniel is that he had a missed call at like 3 o'clock in the morning from Kyle with no voicemail. But, you know, whatever. So Daniel begins to call around to Kyle's family and friends, or his family and his roommate. And as he does, he discovers that Kyle didn't just call Daniel. He called a bunch of other people around the same time.
Did he leave any voicemails for them? Or did anyone talk to him?
No, he did not. He also discovered that Kyle had not shown up for work that day. And with all of the worrisome things piling up, Daniel decides to go ahead and call the police around 5:30 p.m. that day to report Kyle missing. Which, yeah, when I read that, I was like, what a good friend. And before any of the bros like come for me on this, dudes aren't typically in that mindset of, I'm going to worry first. You know, like I said, your first thought as a dude is probably going to be like, oh, he got some, you know, like blah, blah, blah. But Daniel's like, something's weird. I'm going to go ahead and file this report.
Well, I think if sans the phone calls to everybody, I bet he probably wouldn't have thought it as serious, but the fact that he didn't just call him, but called multiple people, didn't leave a voicemail on any of their phones, and now he's not at work either, and you still have his car, like, that's a lot of red flags piling up.
For sure.
I mean, unless he's trying to call everybody to brag about the fact that he just got some, which I highly doubt, because he would have left a voicemail so that they could play it over and over again. So, definite red flag.
Yeah. So even with the best friend a guy could ever ask for, it wouldn't really matter that Daniel called the police, because the police told Daniel that it was too late in the day to begin an investigation. And some places, it even says that they didn't do investigations on the weekends, so it would have to wait till Monday. And this is 5:30 p.m. on a Friday, by the way. So it was too late in the day, and they're like, oh, it's the weekend. It can wait till Monday.
I have plans. I don't think you understand.
And I want to make it clear. This is Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department. It is not a small police department by any means. They work on the weekends. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And this wasn't like 1990. This was 2007.
And what time of year was it?
It was December, or wait, November.
Maybe as they had holiday plans or party plans or something. That's why I was asking. Not that it's a justification. I'm just saying, like, they made an exception in this situation because they had things to do.
Yeah. Well, with the police department.
Your job, isn't it the police department's job to make sure there's somebody always on hand to answer any calls and start any investigations as necessary? Because I don't know if they're aware of this, but murders happen on the weekend as well.
Yeah, they do, don't they? I don't know. When I saw that, I was just like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing. Other places is like, oh, they immediately started investigating. No, actually, the police didn't. This is one where I know for sure that was the case, because the family immediately started investigation. That same day, Daniel started a Facebook group to find Kyle, saying he was missing. And within hours, it had thousands of people. So the word was spreading quickly across Charlotte that Kyle was missing. And so a lot of people in the city knew, and they started organizing to start searches. And within 24 hours, the family, Dick and Barbara, hired an investigator, a private investigator.
And he works on the weekends?
Shocking, right? Right.
Jeez, he makes his own schedule and works on the weekends.
goodness gracious. And I know that this is the case because the first discovery was made by the private investigator, not by the police. It just makes me so mad. I'm not surprised, but
Out of curiosity, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but was the private investigator a retired cop or anything like that?
You know what? Funny you should ask that. I could never get the name of who the private investigator was. And specifically, there was a YouTuber who was like, the name of the private investigator has never been released. So, don't know. Question mark. Put a pin in that, I guess. I don't know. So they started going out and they started searching. They had groups of volunteers searching the route that they thought that Daniel would have taken that night. But what there was a lot of stuff that they didn't know at this point. The bar where he was at, they guessed that he had gone south because his condo was south. That's not where he went. Anyways, the first bit of information that was discovered by the private investigator was he went to the Buckhead Saloon? Yeah. And he discovered that Kyle had left that bar without his wallet or his coat. And Kyle was only wearing a t-shirt, jeans, and dress shoes that night. And it was 30 degrees. Another red flag. You know, if police had discovered that, maybe they'd be like, oh yeah, something serious is going on. You know. So here's the thing. Here's what's really strange to me too. And I brought it up earlier, is the fact that Kyle called multiple people that night. So he called his father 3 times. He called Noelle 2 times. He called his mom. He called Daniel. He called his roommate, Bruce.
Why didn't he leave any voicemails? That's what's bugging me.
Didn't leave a single voicemail. But his dad actually ends up saying in a statement that he thinks the reason that, and this makes sense to me, he thinks the reason that his son didn't leave a voicemail is because he was either desperately in need of a ride or desperately looking for somebody to answer the phone because he needed them to answer the phone right then.
And I get that. I mean, in the time it takes you to leave a voicemail, you're missing out on making other calls. What if your phone's dying? You don't want to use up your battery trying to leave a voicemail to somebody who's not even going to answer or get to you on time. And right. I kind of get that. It's just kind of like after three or four calls, I feel like I would have left a voicemail with somebody just in case. Like, I can't get you right now, but if you check the voicemail, you're going to get back to me ASAP.
True. And I thought, like, you know, maybe it was a butt dial because I have a habit. Like, I don't put the lock screen on my phone because if I have it, like, sitting in front of me, I don't want it to go to sleep. I would just want it to stay open because half the time my iPhone's like, are you a new person? Because I can't unlock. I don't know who you are. So I just like to leave it open so it just doesn't go to sleep. And a lot of the times what will happen is I forget to lock it and I'll stick it in my pocket. And it normally calls my dad because he's the last person I talk to. And my dad can just hear me moving around. But if we're talking like a dozen calls, no.
To several different people too.
Yeah. So Kyle's dad was actually, this is another weird part. Kyle's dad was actually not in Charlotte that night. He was up in Raleigh, for those who are not familiar with the area. Raleigh is 2.5 hours away from Charlotte for business, and he was staying overnight. And Kyle actually knew that. So it didn't really make sense that Kyle would call his dad unless he was trying to get a hold of him, so that his dad would either tell him what to do or get in contact
with somebody else. Yeah.
And the other thought that I had was, you know, I tend to err on the side of he was just trying to find somebody to pick him up. Maybe he forgot his dad was out of town or whatever. Because if he was in like a dire situation, he would call 911.
Well, you would hope, but that's not always the case. Sometimes you're not thinking straight. Well, I think sometimes too, I mean, you said he was in his 20s, right? So
yeah.
He's still fairly young. He hasn't had a lot of life experience in dire situations. And sometimes when you panic and you're in a situation you've never been in before, and you, even if you have been told over and over and over how to handle that situation, if you've never been in that situation and you're not thinking straight, he'd been drinking. So that's not the best situation to be in when you have something emergency happen. That's also a possibility. And he wasn't thinking clearly because, you know, he was just trying to get an answer to what should I do. And so he just kept calling people trying to get an answer from somebody. And he thought if he called multiple times, that might get their attention. Again, battery's dying. I'm not going to leave a voicemail. I'm going to keep trying to call people because I'm trying to get somebody to come here and help me.
Yeah. And I think you may be like, you know, closer to what the situation was. Simply because if you think about it, he left his wallet, and there's a point where I think he realized he had left his wallet. And this was back before Uber, before Lyft, before you could, you know, simply just order something off of your phone. You actually had to call a taxi or, you know, wave down a taxi to pick you up. And if he didn't have money on him, how was he going to pay for that taxi? You know, so this is a kid essentially who is like, I've never been in this situation. I don't know what to do. Let me call my dad.
And texting wasn't a big thing at that point either.
No, not really.
That was just kind of starting. Oh, I remember. I remember. Yeah. I was in college at the time. You had to pay extra for texting, let alone unlimited texting. So that wasn't really a thing that had picked up at that point yet, I don't think. So on top of that, you don't even have that option. Because, I mean, that's the other thing. If you think about it nowadays, I would just text a bunch of different people and say, hey, somebody call me back and wait to get an answer because that uses up less battery anyway than a call does. So, yeah, that was my other thought. And then, yeah, like you said, you don't have like a service that you can just call and order with a card on file and be fine.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, if he didn't have a service provider loaded on his phone, like a specific taxi company or something like that, if he didn't have the contact loaded, he may not have had a way to look it up at the time because data wasn't super common either.
I will say that I remember back during this time and only a few years later, and especially in like Charlotte and places like Wilmington and Raleigh, there were standard taxi services where the number was call 555-5555 for a taxi. So it was like consecutive numbers.
So when you're drunk and all you can hit is a number.
Yes.
Over and over.
That was pretty much it. So anytime I think like Raleigh's was 999-9999, you know, it was just consecutive numbers. So you knew, and the signs were on the taxis, the signs were on billboards. It was very prominent during that time because I took my last taxi before Uber.
I will say, really big. I wouldn't have thought of that if I had been in that situation because I didn't order taxis at that time. And a lot of times if I had plans with friends, they handled that kind of stuff for me. So even if, it's on the side of the taxi, if you never paid any attention to it because you never had to, again, you're still not going to have that information readily available in your brain. Just a thought.
I can see that.
I wouldn't have.
But as a kid who grew up in Charlotte and in the area, my assumption is that he would have known about.
And I wonder
like
if he even knew where he left his wallet.
Maybe. We're about to get to it. So
okay.
So during the weekend, obviously the police haven't helped one iota. They had a lake party or something like that to go to. I don't know, potluck. The family and the friends are actually leading the whole thing, as I said, but there are things that they can't access. The police can. So on Monday, November 12th, 2007, the police finally step in to help. And this is 3 days after he's gone missing. 3 days. Once they join in on the search,
I just want to make a comment because it was bugging me. You know, the whole show, The First 48.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when that originally aired?
Mm-mm.
2004. So it was well established at this point, just saying, that the first 48 hours are kind of pivotal. So maybe the police station needs to work on the weekends in case something happens on a Friday or a Saturday.
I don't even know if that is true, like what they're saying is true, or if they're just like, oh, it's a young man. You know, we don't. He's probably fine. Like, he's a dude.
He's an adult. He can leave and disappear if he wants to.
That's another thing. They're like, maybe he just wanted to leave. I'm like, no. Why is that always your first guess? Because it doesn't
happen
as often as
you think. Maybe you should investigate to see if that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Maybe.
Well, once they do join, they make some immediate discoveries. This would have been great 3 days ago, but, you know, better late than never. They first check out the footage at the bar that night, and they do see Kyle chatting with a woman and later dancing with her. But the woman ends up leaving with what they eventually find out is her boyfriend and a group of other guys. There's speculation that the woman he was flirting with may have had something to do with it. I'm not going to comment on that. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But the police do track her down and say they don't believe she and her boyfriend had anything to do with it, which is odd because there is also footage of an altercation between Kyle and the boyfriend and his friends outside of the bar that night.
Ooh,
and the two groups, the group and Kyle, left within 2 minutes of each other. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be that, or it could be that she was fighting with her boyfriend and she thought he was cute. I mean, there's no way of knowing. Or it could be that they're poly and all of a sudden the boyfriend decided he wasn't anymore. I mean, there are so many different situations here. That's why you're supposed to investigate. And then when you find something like this, interview, not come out the gate saying, we don't really think you have anything to do with this. So go ahead and confirm that suspicion for us real quick.
Yeah. And I'm leaning more towards that group probably didn't have anything to do with it. But I feel like they should have gone down that line of investigation a little bit more than what they did. You know, they simply talked to this woman and then decided, she didn't have anything to do with it. On to the next one.
You're supposed
to. Oh, man.
From what I understand, and I'm not a professional detective or investigative anything, but I feel like if you're doing this, you're supposed to approach it with a non-biased attitude, i.e. you do not have a set assumption before talking to the person.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my thoughts.
Yeah, same. So police also discovered footage from a loading dock camera a little bit away from the bar and then a local pizza place showing Kyle just walking by, and he's alone at this point. With that information, the family knew where they needed to search, and they realized, like, they, you know, there was a whole area where they could have been searching and they hadn't been because they, you know, didn't get this information because they didn't have access to it because, again, the police don't work on the weekends.
So you said he was walking, like, was he just walking normally as if he was just walking by?
Yes.
Was he rushed, stumbling?
Nope. He was walking normally. He was not stumbling. He did not look intoxicated. He looked normal. The only off thing is that he didn't have a coat on. It was 30 degrees and he was wearing short sleeves, you know?
That's off.
That's a bit off. But around 2:30 a.m. Friday morning, the morning that Kyle went missing, he actually showed up at a Fuel Pizza, a different pizza place than the one that the camera footage came from. And this is about 10 minutes after he left the bar. He went into the Fuel Pizza. He ordered two slices of everything, like a extreme everything pizza. He went to the bathroom. He came out and he got his pizza. And this is where I think he probably discovered that he didn't have his wallet. He did pay for his pizza with what they assume is just a little bit of cash that he had on him. And I can't imagine Fuel Pizza cost that much, you know, in 2007. So he paid with that. And the reason that I say I think that he probably discovered it at this point is because within just a few minutes of him sitting down to eat his pizza, that's when he made the 3 phone calls to his dad's cell phone and then his dad's work phone. Then, but what's weird to me is the time between calls. So he first calls a business that he had been to previous during the day. And I don't know if it was, nobody has said what the business was, just that he was at it previous in the day. My assumption is that it was the bar that he was at.
Trying to find his wallet.
Yeah, trying to find his wallet. Then he checks his voicemail. And then that's when he makes those 3 calls to his dad. 18 minutes after that, he tries his sister Noelle again, because he had actually tried to call Noelle when he was about to leave the bar. And she didn't answer. Again, it's 2:19 in the morning when he left the bar. It's now almost 3, or it is 3 a.m. at this point when he calls Noelle. He then tries his friend Daniel and then his roommate Bruce. And when he doesn't get an answer from any of them and he doesn't leave a voicemail, by this time it's 3:30. That's a lot of time between calls. And I don't know if he was like struggling with trying to figure out who he needed to call. Maybe that was it.
That's a lot of time, especially since nobody answered. I mean, a dial with no answer is like 1-2 minutes tops each.
Yeah. But I think his phone was, I think you were onto something when you said his phone may be close to dying, because 30 minutes after his last phone call at 4 a.m., Kyle's phone is either switched off or it dies because they lose track of it. And he had actually left the pizza place when he was making these calls.
I was going to ask that because I was like, well, he got 2 big slices of pizza. He's probably eating. But if he had already left, then he must have eaten his pizza or took it with him.
Yeah. I don't know if he sat down and I know he sat down and ate. I don't know if he made all the some of the phone calls there and then he left. The only reason we know he went to Slice or Slice, wrong place, wrong state. The only reason we know he went to Fuel Pizza is because the person who was working at Fuel Pizza said that they had a, what's that, perfect memory recall or whatever.
Photographic memory?
Photographic memory.
Identic memory.
Yeah.
Photographic memory said, is not technically correct anymore.
I remember this person coming in and they ordered, you know, an extreme slice, 2 extreme slices or whatever. And Kyle's dad was actually like, yeah, that's his exact order that he always gets at Fuel Pizza. So I'm pretty sure that was him.
Also, I mean, I can't imagine, while they're probably one of the few places open, I can't imagine they have a whole bunch of clients coming in and getting pizza at that time.
Right. That's my thought too. But we're wrong on that front. Because Kyle sits down to eat his pizza. He orders the pizza. He goes to the bathroom. He comes out. He gets it. He sits down to eat. The person who recalls seeing him says, yes, I recalled seeing him, but I don't recall when he left because shortly after that, we had a rush of people come in, which
Hello,
makes sense.
Bars closed down and that's the only place open that you can get food.
Correctamundo. So I don't 100% know when he left and when all the calls were made. So, I do with that what you will. But the police are able to track Kyle's location after he leaves the pizza place. And he actually ends up heading north towards Noda and ends up in Noda, 3 miles away without a jacket in 30-degree weather. I know, it's really weird. And again, it's odd because Kyle actually lived in South Charlotte, so he should have gone south. But again, I don't know what type of phone he had. I don't know if he had GPS on the phone, if he knew which way was which. But if he didn't have GPS, my thought
I would think
you know
he would be at least somewhat familiar with the city if he lived there.
You would think, but it was a little bit easier for us during that time, Samantha, because the street signs were pretty clear. It's either a number north or a number south, and you knew which direction you were going based on that, because you could say, oh, okay, I know exactly where I need to go. Here, everything has a fucking name to it.
Yeah, well, we're getting
the
more
first
and more
time I moved here, I was like, what? How am I supposed to know where Pearson Street is? The fuck are you talking about? Anyway, pick up your city.
Nothing can be easy.
Yeah,
I will say that the grid pattern in cities with numbers is very much easier. I will agree with you.
Yes, it's a lot better. So anywhere in Birmingham, you can figure out where you need to go just by the cross sections of the streets. It's pretty fantastic.
We also have all the biggest buildings are all like in the center of town. So if you can walk towards them, you know roughly where you are.
Yeah. I wouldn't suggest doing that at night, though. Don't go towards that side tonight. Oh, man. Oh, it might have changed since then, but I doubt it. So they said that he ends up in Noda, right? And we've all been to Noda. It's a hippie kind of place. But everything that I saw talking about this said that Noda back in 2007 was a dangerous place to be, especially at night. And I'm
that's
like,
not uncommon.
What?
Avondale in Alabama was the exact same thing right before we started going there when the brewery got there. That actually helped that area a lot. So that's definitely not uncommon.
Okay. Yeah. I felt kind of sketched about it because I was like, I've been here for a while. And Noda has not been a dangerous place in a while. But I'm like, 2007, girl, you were 17 back then. Come on.
Get it. Oh, God. Don't say that.
You weren't anywhere near it. I just wanted to rub that in. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, man, you're welcome. So later that week, a taxi driver claimed to have seen Kyle walking in Noda that night. And he said he took note of him because it was cold and Kyle wasn't dressed for the weather. And also, he was not in a safe part of town and shouldn't have been walking around during that time.
Did this person stop and say, hey, dude, do you need a ride?
No. He did describe a person that looked a lot like Kyle. So they're pretty sure that it was Kyle that the taxi driver saw. And I mean, who else is going to be walking around with just a t-shirt on in 30 degree weather? Here's where things get a little bit odd, and I don't really know what to say about it, but there is a gang group called MS-13, and they were highly, I don't know if they still are, but they were highly active in that area at that time. They are an international, like, gang group. They're dangerous, blah, 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 all this other stuff. Some people speculate that this gang, he ran up on this gang that night. And whether it was an unfortunate situation or he was targeted by them, they don't know. Some other people think that he was looking to buy drugs, which I say bullshit because the guy only had enough to buy pizza. Why was he going to look for drugs? Nay. Not true. So that's a little bit of speculation there where people are like, oh, it had to have been, you know, MS-13. Who did this? So maybe, I don't know.
I feel like that sounds like a catch-all type thing. Mm-hmm. Just blame it on this.
Yeah. Police did bring out dogs and they traced him and, you know, they had his jacket from that night or his coat from that night from the bar. And the dogs tracked him to Fuel Pizza, which, okay, cool. That's where he went first. Then they looped around Fuel Pizza a few times. And they were like, was he walking in circles? They think he walked in circles. And then the dogs tracked him up towards Noda, into Noda. And they stopped at a construction site. And it was a construction site for condos in Noda. And one of the dog handlers said, when we got there, we smelled decomposition. Like, we smelled decomp pretty prevalently there. They allowed the dogs to go into the construction site, which at the time had open holes in the ground to lay pipe. But they couldn't figure out where this smell was coming from. And not only, and it wasn't just the dog handlers that smelled this. People in that area, for days leading up to it, the dogs getting there, and for weeks afterwards, were calling and reporting a smell that smelled like a large decomposing animal in the area. To top that off, a known unhoused man in the area said that he saw Kyle get jumped by a group of people, but they don't, he doesn't know where they took his body. But they are not taking that report. They're taking it with a grain of salt, you know? So, another theory is that the Little Sugar Creek runs through that area. Some people think that, and especially during that time, if you think like Brian Schaefer, you know, the smiley face killers and all of that stuff were coming along, a lot of men, young men, would disappear from bars and they would end up in bodies of water. But they searched the creek, they didn't find anything, blah, 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 blah. What the family thinks is that Kyle didn't know what direction he was going in because he didn't have, you know, a way to figure that out. He went in the wrong direction. He ended up in the wrong side of town. Somebody did something to him and disposed of his body in that construction site, and now there are condos on top of it. But they didn't dig up the area, so we'll never know. Also, they did actually hire a psychic at one point, and she went out to the site and said, yeah, I feel his body is here. But do it that way you will, you know. I believe in psychics, but I don't know if I believe in that one, you know. It's all a thumb toss.
Yeah, I would have to agree on that. I believe it's a real thing. I don't believe all of them are real.
Right. So Kyle has never been found, obviously. His family is still really active and will talk to the media about this, especially his dad. His dad is very vocal on what he thinks happened and, you know, what could have been done better. About 3 years after Kyle went missing, Barbara and Dick actually ended up moving to Florida because they couldn't stand to be in the area anymore. And that is where they live today. The case is still open. Like Samantha's case, if you know any information, contact Mecklenburg Police Department. We'll put that information in the show notes. But yeah, that's the story of Kyle Fleshman.
Good job. But yeah, that is very frustrating in a lot of different ways. It certainly seems like it makes the most sense that that's where he is. The dogs led you there. People were complaining about the smell. Signs point in one direction, unfortunately. I'm really surprised they didn't search the area better, considering those two factors. It seems odd that they wouldn't have, unless maybe...
Well, the Samantha,
building company can pay to make sure that their condos get built with little to no delay.
Delay. Yeah. Maybe.
But it's very also, unfortunate. Like I said, I mean, I wouldn't want to buy a condo there because, like, I would always wonder if that was the case. And I wouldn't want to have a condo if that was in that spot.
I know where these condos are. But they, damn it, I was going to say something, and I forgot what I was going to say. Shit. ADHD.
You'll remember it in the middle of the next case that we cover.
Yeah, probably. I find it really odd. I think, like, for me, what Kyle's dad says does make sense, but at the same time, something feels really not... It doesn't all add up to me.
I don't really understand why a group would jump him if he was in short sleeves, so he doesn't even have a coat. Like, I mean, maybe, but I feel like that wouldn't be a target because you'd be like, well, why? He doesn't even have a coat. What's the likelihood that he's going to have anything we can steal? Like, there would have to be a singular purpose for that. And I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't. Something about it rings hollow, I guess.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is like Kyle's dad said, you know, maybe they didn't, you know, thieves aren't always smart. Maybe they jumped him, realized he didn't have money. And, you know, they, you know, which I don't know that I fully believe that, because while, you know, criminals can be stupid, a lot of the times they are not murderous. They're desperate. But I don't think that that would be the case. I think that's where I'm having a hard time understanding, because people who are going to steal from you aren't always likely to murder you. That's all they want is money.
I mean, let's run with a theory. What if they, instead of just jumping him, they knocked him in the head to incapacitate him and he fell. They realized they didn't have anything, left him, and then he got up, was disoriented, walked onto that property and fell into one of those holes.
You know, it's possible.
Like, that's entirely possible, especially since they didn't search the site
well
very thoroughly.
Yeah.
Or at all.
That is possible. One of the things that Kyle's dad did say is that if his son had gone missing just a few years later in the same circumstances, he believes that his son would be with him today because technology would have been more advanced. And he wouldn't have been in the situation that he was in, which is really sad.
And I wonder how much different the area would have been in just a couple of years, especially if those condos were going up.
Yeah. I mean, just 10 years later, you know, when we moved here, Noda was a hippy dippy sort of area. Still kind of is. Maybe I don't know it as well. Maybe it is still dangerous, but I highly doubt it. And that's it from the peanut gallery. Anyway.
Well, thank you for covering that case, I guess. I mean, I'm glad you covered it. Maybe somebody out there knows something and they can say something, but
maybe.
Very frustrating. It's always frustrating when we cover these cases and it's like, but you could have done your job and things may have turned out a little differently.
Yeah.
I think the part that's the most frustrating when people don't run with it and they... And you have to at least give them partial credit for not being able to solve it. Because it's like, well, we had plans, so we wanted to wait 2 days before we did it. Like, that's just frustrating. Any delay whatsoever is just always frustrating. But
well, and if what you said is true, and he, like, stumbled into that construction zone, it was probably right before construction started again, because it was around 4 o'clock in the morning. They could have just covered his body by mistake. And if police had taken that, you know, that report
first
seriously,
report. Mm-hmm.
they could have found him, you know, maybe because it was a Friday.
And the scent would have been stronger, too, because it would have been fresh. So the dogs may have had an easier time tracking him down.
Yeah. So, you know, don't take
the what
make
ifs.
Sure you have a police department open on the weekends. I guess that's your takeaway from this. Anyways,
yeah, maybe before you move into an area, call the police department and say, hey, do you guys work on the weekends? Just to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah, do that. You know, you check and see if a fire department is nearby. Call and make sure your police department works on the weekends. You know, the normal things.
Just do your due diligence. Know the area
Anyways,
you're moving into.
Great job, me. Great job, you. Great job, Kelsey. Until
As
next
always.
Time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.